Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Get us better away? Now, Charlie. Welcome to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. I'm your host, Chavo Guerrero Jr. Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast today. Thank you for tuning in. Appreciate it very much. Don't forget to hit that like button and that subscribe button to keep us going and bring you bigger and better guests and getting us into your car, on your drive, in your living room every week. We appreciate it very much. I'm sitting here in my living room in beautiful Southern California today. Although the sun's not out, still a gorgeous day out here and getting ready for a good week here. I'm getting ready to go to the Colorado River. That's one thing living in Southern California. We have everything really close by. We have the beach, of course, is you know a few miles away from me. I have the mountains is about an hour away if I want to hit the snow. I have the river, which is about 3 hours away if I want to get to the river and take a boat out and do that. And it's boating season right now. I grew up going to the river with my family. We had a boat and, you know, always going to the river and enjoying that whole thing. And I brought up my kids doing the same thing. And that's something that they really love. So I'm looking forward to getting out there and seeing all my Arizona peeps out there and throwing back a few cold ones, getting a suntan and just having a good, fun, relaxing time out there and unwinding. I'm not too much in the water sports anymore like I was. I was a big wakeboarder guy and water skier guy, but because I get older, man, that stuff hurts when I fall and break an eardrum from hitting the water too hard. And now I'm just like, you know, I always like to call my boat a big raft with a $10,000 stereo system in it, because really the best times that I like in it now is getting in it and floating down the river and blasting the tunes. So I'm looking forward to doing that exact thing this week. I'm really happy today on the show to have a good friend of mine in honor of Young Rock. If you guys all know that I'm the wrestling coordinator on this NBC series Young Rock, which is the story of Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. And it really chronicles his life from growing up in elementary school and high school and playing for the University of Miami and getting to become a pro wrestler. So it's kind of really cool to be a part of this franchise and really, really great place to work. And in honor of our renewal of season two, today I have on Matt Willig, who plays Andre the Giant on the show. Matt is a big guy who has, he's an athlete. He's played, you know, college football for University of Southern California and won a Rose Bowl with them. He's been in the NFL for, I believe, 14 years and has a Super Bowl ring and a championship ring also. And now has transitioned to the acting world, and you recognize him from shows like Dexter and Malcolm in the Middle and movies like We're the Millers, and pretty memorable guy because he's big dude, but he's got great acting chops and can actually throw it down. And as he's shown playing Andre the Giant on Young Rock, and he's one of the favorite characters on the show, not just because his acting ability, but his athletic ability in the ring and his acting prowess. Is that a word? Prowess? Yeah, I guess so. Prowess. So I'm really happy to jump on an interview with Big Matty, as we call him. A good friend of mine that I really got close to in Australia when we filmed season one. He, along with a lot of the other guys, the other actors, the other guys playing wrestlers and the actors on the show, just a really, really good time and great group of guys and girls. And we're all happy to get ready to get back and doing this again. So season two of Young Rock is going to be coming out here, and I'm not sure when because we haven't started filming it yet, but it's going to be great, I'm sure, as the first season was. So it brings me great pleasure to talk with my boy, Big Matt Willig, a.k.a. Andre the Giant from Young Rock, starting now. Big Matt Willig, what's going on, my brother? Thanks for being on the podcast, Suplex and Cervezas, man. I miss you, man, and it's great to see your face.
Thank you, my brother. It's always a pleasure to see you since we played golf last, and I sucked it up. But yeah. No,
you played well until, like, the back nine. I played better on the back nine. Well, not better. Better for me than back nine.
Yeah.
Front nine, you were killing it. Front nine, man, I could not get it together until finally, like, phew.
But it was good to play with you. And like we had talked about off air, we'll do it again soon.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, man. What you got going on right now? We're getting ready for season two coming up, huh?
Yeah, you know, we're hoping that that's going to happen. I have nothing official to announce or anything like that. But, right. You know, as you know, the weight that I gained last season, I took most of it off, which I'm so freaking thankful for.
Yeah.
That my body at this age could respond. And it's funny because I just in the last like week or two got myself feeling like I wasn't bloated all the time. And I felt like I was getting into the gym and I kind of had a nice routine going. And, you know, I'm hoping to hear something. I've been told that it probably will happen, you know, but right. You don't know. But I got to start now. If I'm going to gain the weight in a sort of healthier way, then I got to start gaining now.
For everybody listening here, Matt is playing. He plays Andre the Giant on Young Rock. I'm sure you guys all know that, but just letting you in that. And the iconic Andre the Giant, man, what did you know anything about wrestling as a kid? Did you follow wrestling as a kid?
You know, I have to say, man, and I thought about before doing all this press that I did over the last season, like, right. Do I lie and say I was this huge wrestling fan? But I wasn't. I truly wasn't. I was one of six boys growing up, and we just didn't. It's weird. We did our own wrestling, but we never got into it. So I wasn't a huge fan. Obviously, I knew of Andre. I knew
right,
the
you
iconic.
You knew of Andre, right? Everybody knows who Andre was.
Yeah, I knew of the iconic guys, you know, right. And was a fan of, like, right away. I instantly was like, these guys are balling. These guys are freaking athletes.
Right.
You know,
right.
I was never of that ilk. I never had that feeling of, well, that's fake, and that's. I'm like, these right. guys are going after it. So yeah, I had a total appreciation for them.
Well, I think that goes with anything. Like anybody who's a fan of sports, anybody who plays sports, you may not like that sport, but you know that's like demanding. You know, like I wasn't a water polo guy in high school and stuff, but you know that those guys were busting their butts in that water, and you know, and it was physical, and they're punching people and tugging and putting. It's a pretty tough sport, you know. So even though I never played it, you get it. You understand it, yeah.
If you're an athlete at all, then you appreciate other athletes grinding and working hard and doing what they do.
Right, right, right. Now, you say you're one of six boys?
Yeah.
Your poor mom and dad.
I know. I'm the fifth of six, so things got easier for me. You know, my older brothers always give me a lot of shit because, like, oh, once it was just you and the little brother, that, you know, things got easier. Food got better.
Yeah.
You know, but more expensive food came across the table. You know, when there's six of you, like, we were just, it was pastas and big giant dishes. It was hilarious.
My cousins, I grew up, my mom's older brother, he had five boys. So they would, like, things that I just grew up, me and my sister. So I didn't really know how that dynamic worked, except when I'd go visit them. But they'd say that, you know, popsicles came in six. So.
Right.
They get one, and whoever could eat the fastest would get the sixth one. So they, I mean, I was like, wow, I didn't really think about that, but that's a tough way to grow up, man. You're fighting for everything you get, huh?
The dinner table was no joke, man. And my dad was a cop. He was LAPD cop. So it was a strict household. But the dinner table was the one place where he was like, I don't want any talking. I want you guys to sit down and eat, because he didn't want to make it a big giant deal. You know, the six boys, man, we'll end up throwing shit at each other and stuff like that. We sat down and we grubbed hard, man. It was a trough freaking event. It was awesome.
That's awesome. And, you know, LAPD, for as good as, you know, money that, you know, a cop in Los Angeles will make, that's six boys. I don't care how much money. You got to make like millions of dollars to be able to feed you guys, you know.
He had a second and a third, you know. That's how my dad did it, man. He busted his ass nonstop.
Now, how big are you? I know this answer, but
yeah, that's okay. I go 6'8". You know, I usually kind of hover around 290-ish. Mm. You know, for Young Rock, I decided to get up and I was around 300 and I ended up going about 330.
Wow.
You know,
so you dropped 40 pounds. Wow. Gosh.
Damn. Yeah. So I've dropped about almost 30 of that. You know, I'm about 10 pounds over what I normally am. Cause I didn't want to get down this low anyways. I just thought, you know, hey, keep our fingers crossed. Season two comes around. It's a lot easier to gain 20 pounds than it is to gain another 30 back.
Yeah, for sure. Gosh,
you know, so
wow, that's
6'8". You know, that's the first. It's funny, Chavo, because it's the first time in my career that I can actually say that out loud. You know, as an actor, and people will probably have an idea of this. Yeah, you're too big. You know, you don't want to ever use the word 6'8". You know, I've said I was 6'6½ at times. You know,
right.
But it's kind of hard to get away from that right now. So
yeah, you'll get stereotyped. That's the thing in Hollywood, what people don't understand is that, like, you know, guys like Batista and The Rock have kind of broken out of that mode a little
sure.
bit. But you're stereotyped. You're like you're gonna be the bouncer. You're gonna be the gang member. You're gonna be you know. And
it's a trip how much the difference between, let's say, a 6'4" guy is, who is still tall
in the
industry.
Big.
That's big, you know, but you go to 6'7", 6'8", like me, it's like you said, it's a whole different dynamic. You know, I've been on set many a times when I literally, you're very sensitive to these things. You can hear the DP or somebody going, yeah, there's no way we can get him in the shot, you know? So I'm like, hey, Matt, back up. I'm like 10 feet behind everybody else, even though it looks like I'm right next to him.
Right. That's what, like, in wrestling, I was always small. I was too small. Toys too small. And in Hollywood, I'm kind of like the right size, you know,
about
5'9". It's like, all right, cool. We can, you know, it's kind of, we can make it work with this guy, you know?
Yep.
Are your brothers big? Are they tall, big?
It's kind of a funny thing. The oldest is the shortest. And then we sort of go like this. So like, it's like my oldest brother is 5'11". And then the next two were twins at 6'2". And then my next brother was 6'5". Then myself. And then my little brother, I call my little brother, my younger brother, he's about 6'7" as well.
Wow. You know?
So, yeah. So my, so I like to say
bigger, that. Bigger.
Yeah, my parents were perfecting. They were perfecting the art of making a baby.
Yeah. That's funny, though, how everybody that my friends that have multiple siblings, they're always saying how much easier the younger ones had it, you know. And I look at myself, I have two boys. My oldest boy, I was definitely a lot harder on, you know, because you think, and then when you're like, it's far, you're fine. Stay out late if you want, whatever. Just don't die and don't become a meth head and just, you're good, you know?
It's so true, man, how much you relax. And it was true. You know, my older brothers used to get beat on, man. I'm telling you, it was old school in my house, you know?
Yeah.
And then by the time that me and my little brother kind of came up, you know, my dad was tired. He was like, It just don't, like you said, don't get killed. Don't get in a car accident. Don't kill anybody. You're good.
Don't get anybody pregnant. You're okay. Right.
No shit.
Tell me about you're an athlete growing up, and all your brothers were athletes also, right? They were all pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah. Athletes. We came from a football family, and it was just the way that it was. And the trippy thing about it is that, you know, my dad was not a big athlete. He played a little, you know, football when he played for the LAPD. They used to have a little team going on. But he was never like a guy who pushed us. It was just sort of natural for us to be a football family and an athlete family. And I came up, you know, I never played Pop Warner football, oddly enough. and played flag football in grade school. I was always, you know how that goes in Pop Warner. It's always the size and the weight and all that stuff, and it never really jived for me. So, so I never played. I always played flag football. Mm-hmm. Was a soccer kid growing up, and then obviously was a big hooper. Loved basketball in high school, and was pretty darn good at it. Could have gone in to some smaller at the time Pac-10 schools and played some hoop.
Right.
But I was a footballer, you know, at this size, even when I was skinny as a high school kid, I was probably 230, you know, same kind of frame, 6'7", 230.
Yeah.
Ended up going to USC and on a full scholarship and playing there for 5 years.
Wow. And you were on that Rose Bowl winning team, right?
Yeah. A couple of Rose Bowl teams. I was there from 87 to 91 and, you know, Larry Smith was our coach, but, you know, it was Junior Seau and Todd Marinovich, and we had a killer defense, Mark Carrier and Tim Ryan and Scott Ross and all these guys that ended up were big-time All-Americans. We had a crazy, crazy good team. So had a lot of fun.
We had Todd. I'm about the same age as Todd. So we, of course, you know, he was a good football player, and he was just that legend, you know, in our area. It was like Todd Marinovich, first went to Mater Dei, then I'm going to Capo.
Yeah.
But his mom used to sub for us sometimes, and his mom would come in, and we're like, Marinovich, is that Todd's? Like, she was like a legend. She'd come over and like sub, and we're like, wow, Robo QB's mom subbing for us. You know?
It was a trip getting to know Todd. Because, you know, we'd had heard all the stories about him, and some of your fans may know, you know, the troubles that he's gone through over the years and, you know, dealing with drugs and stuff like that. And he's such a super sweet dude. You know, I mean, there's a misconception about him, and he's such a great kid, and I call him a kid. But, he's a good dude and someone that I still talk to every now and then.
That was cool to see him when he came in the NFL for a bit and did some stuff with the Raiders. I was like, man, this kid's he's freaking good, man.
And he had an attitude. And he was that sort of as an offensive lineman, which I became, you know, you want that quarterback who's sort of a dick, you know, that attitude, you know, and he has the attitude of an offensive lineman. And he was that dude. And he was just a classic guy. And he's doing well now. I just talked to him recently. Yeah. And
good.
Yeah. So.
So Junior Seau, wow, man, that's huge, man. I was a huge Junior Seau fan. You know, Southern California guy, and you're a Southern California guy.
Yeah.
You know, the Chargers and stuff, and guy.
Seau
was awesome, man.
He was my roommate. He was my roommate my freshman year. We came in together, and we ended up being roommates in the dorms.
Yeah.
And that was a crazy experience, just because he came in, and he was a Prop 48 guy. And those who don't know, Prop 48 is basically academic. You come into college on academic probation, and he didn't play his first year. So he kind of basically, I would see him now and then. He would be going to class or whatever. But we got to know each other pretty well, and I ended up getting him out of a couple fights here and there, and it was he was still in the island mode, so he was wearing his lava lavas, and he was even eating fruity island pebble cereal. He was a complete islander kind of guy, you know, from San Diego. But it was a shame, you know. Junior had a beautiful career; it was a beautiful dude, and I think that. I don't know. You know, some people say CTE really, really wrecked him. And there was obviously some issues going on. I saw some stuff back in the day without getting too morbid, but I saw some things back in the day that he had that sort of dual personality, that kind of split personality that I see happens.
Well, you see, we've both seen it in both of our respective professions.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it be CTE or whatever, it can't be good. The stuff that we've put our heads through and our bodies through, it can't be really good for you. You know, I remember, you know, you get your bell rung, just get back off and just go. That's just the way it was. And if they say in anytime you see stars, like the stars going, that's a slight concussion.
That's a concussion.
How many, it's happened thousands of times to me. How many times has that happened to you?
I mean, look, man, I played just like you. You had a long career. I played 14 years in the NFL. So you can't, you know, 14 plus another 5 in college, that's 19 and a few years of high school. So, you know, over 20 years of banging your head, and who knows, like you said, how many times have I gone, oh, shit, I need a minute, you know, and that's literally your brain freaking rattling around in there. And, the fact that I'm here having a conversation with you at all, Chavo.
I know, right? Or me asking you questions.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's funny. Did you know who was the blonde quarterback, the blonde defensive lineman from SC that played for the Packers? What was his name? I forgot. So I'm going brain dead. Speaking of brain dead. Super Bowl winning, Super Bowl with long blonde hair, SC guy.
Like Clay Matthews.
Clay Matthews. There you go. All of a sudden I went blonde on him. Did you know him at all?
That would have been funny, Chavo. We would have had a CT moment of like 5 minutes. Your producer would have been like, hey, cut it off.
I've been like, hey, Siri, who played for right?
Seriously. Yeah, Clay Matthews.
Did you know him?
I know him a little bit. He came in after me. Right, he's a younger guy. He was younger, but you know, he was up here in the valley for a little while and training. And his dad, it's funny, I played football with his dad at the Atlanta Falcons. So that's how old I am. Yeah, you know, I played ball with his dad in Atlanta. So
see, I the reason I asked is because he SC guy, and I like 2 days after they won the Super Bowl, just by chance, we were wrestling in the same area, like in Green Bay. Mm-hmm. And we went to the airport, and we're sitting there at the airport after our show. It was me, Randy Orton, a couple other guys. And all of a sudden I see this big old dude, and he's got a hoodie on, you know, and he's kind of like, and we're like, that Clay Matthews? And we're like, hey man, what's up? He's like, hey, what's up, dudes? And then, so we're like, we're eating, come eat with us. So he came down, ate with us, and we're all kind of hanging out. He was going to the Ellen show, you know, he up there for a minute, and he was telling me, I was like, this one, my son was younger, and he was telling me his story that he never played until his senior year when somebody got hurt. Then they put him in there and ended up doing pretty good, and Green Bay took a chance on him. And
isn't it was that like, amazing?
Yeah, man. And it's such a difference, like, from, I mean, just to make it to college football, and especially at a D1
high level
team,
yeah,
and then all of a sudden to go to the NFL, it's so different. Like, I know a lot of good football players that were really good in high school, really good in college, and did not make it in the NFL.
It's a crazy my story is crazy. You know, I people that I know will often say, dude, your story is incredible, you know. And I kind of slough it off because, you know, when you're living your life, you're just grinding. But I was a defensive end at SC, a slow 6'7" defensive end white kid, and didn't get drafted. Was a free agent only because a guy who worked for USC called the New York Jets and said, "Hey, take a chance on Matt. If nothing else, he's a great guy. He'll come in. He'll work his ass off for you."
Wow.
And that gave me the opportunity to get into camp. Quickly realizing again that I was too slow to play in the NFL at that position, but I had a nastiness about me that the O-line coach and the head coach said, "Hey, let's try you out on offense." And, you know, anybody that knows sports and especially football, to try to make that transition, you know, in the NFL when you're just trying to make it, was mind-boggling and sort of a, you know, crazy chore. But
in college, you're DL defensive line.
Yeah, Wow. Okay, so I went the whole time as a defensive end.
Wow.
And then only moved over. Basically, what quick story? I did this little tryout after practice. They came to me and said, "Hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to send you home. We're going to release you. We're going to send you home back to California. This is in New York." And we're going to bring you back in 2 weeks, and we're going to put you in the practice squad as an O-lineman, and we'll see how it goes. So that's how my career began. Just, you know, by kind of, again, man, you never know, busting your ass, right, working hard, and then I just got a chance, and that ended up turning into a 14-year career. So, you know, there are so many different ways to make it. You know, you watch the draft here in the last couple of weeks, and people ask me what I think, and I always say the same thing. What I think is there's going to be about 50% of the guys that you'll never hear of, or you haven't heard of, that will be stars one day in the NFL, or that will play 10 years, you know, because that's the way it goes.
Right.
So,
and guys that you hear of that don't ever make it, you know, you look at Tom Brady, you know, he was coming out of Michigan in college and was kind of, you know, whatever. And then comes on to be, you know, as much as I don't like him, he's the greatest ever. He just keeps winning.
He really is, man. I'm telling you what. And for me, it was solidified. Just a side note, after he partied after the Super Bowl and got all screwed up and was throwing the trophy around on the boat and all that stuff. I don't know if you saw that, but
I saw it.
That kind of upped his status with me just a little bit.
Yeah, man. I mean, you just never know. We had a wrestler with us for a long time named Ron Simmons. Ron Simmons was in college at FSU. Bobby Bowden said he's the best player he's ever coached. He was like second in the Heisman as a nose guard. And you don't, as a nose guard, you don't hear this from Ron, because Ron won't tell you, but I know I've heard second, I've heard third, you know, in the voting of as a nose guard, which is unheard of. The guy was incredible. Right. And, you know, really didn't make it in the NFL. I know injuries and stuff happened, but at the same time, whatever, you got this guy that's incredible in college and doesn't make it in the NFL.
And I saw that throughout my whole career, man. Okay. I saw guys come in that had unbelievable talent, you know, the kind of talent that I would have killed for, right. You know, and for one reason or another, man, and they couldn't be a pro. They didn't, right. You know, the injuries, like you said, they didn't want it enough, all these things that kind of, that led them to just fall off the wayside. And so, that's what makes the world go around. Right.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Now you have a Super Bowl ring, huh?
I do. Shit, I should have gotten it for you. I could have pumped it to your fans.
You mean just wear it all the time? If I had a Super Bowl ring, I'd just wear it all the time.
It's like a napkin ring. It's so big off of my fingers.
Yeah, I know, right?
You know, I don't wear it that often. In fact, it's funny because I'll do things and people are like, it will be nice, like good opportunities to wear it, whether it's a some sort of charity function or something. And I never think about wearing it. You know, it's just, it's a weird deal. I actually am probably more proud of the one. I went to two Super Bowls, one with the Rams in the, and then I went back with the Carolina Panthers when we lost to the Patriots, speaking of Tom Brady. And I think I have more affinity for the one that we lost, because when you lose, you get a championship ring.
Yeah.
And they're still pretty freaking cool.
They're huge. Yeah, they're awesome.
Oh, yeah, they're still cool. They don't have all the diamonds in them and anything, but they're still a freaking big ass ring. Yeah. You know, and I think I have more pride wearing that one than I do actually the Super Bowl ring, which is kind of trippy.
What years were you with the Rams when you won Super Bowl?
I went there. So I'll give you guys a quick rundown.
Sure.
92 to 95, I was with the New York Jets. 96, 97, I was with Atlanta Falcons. 98, for one season, I went to Brett Favre and the Green Bay Packers just after they had won their Super Bowls and had a great time there. That was great stories.
Love them.
Oh, I got a couple stories about him. 99, I went to the St. Louis Rams, and that's when I won a Super Bowl. And you know, kind of got there late, like after the season already started, and was a backup. You know, never really played for them. I was just a backup who never really needed me. Right. And quick story: I was in Super Bowl locker room, and I actually didn't dress for the game. I hate saying that, but, you know, I was one of the inactives before the Super Bowl game. And I was bummed. At that point, I'd been in the league for about 8 years, and I was just – that this was even though we were in the grandest stage, it was kind of a shitty deal for me.
Any time we were at WrestleMania and you weren't on the card, you're like, oh, man, really? I'm at WrestleMania.
You get awesome, that.
But I'm not at WrestleMania. Yeah.
Exactly. You know totally. That. That's that spirit that we have, man. Yep. We want to compete. We want to be there.
Right.
And Dick Vermeil, the head coach of the Rams, came up to me in the locker room, sitting at my locker. He came up and he sat down and he said, hey, I know what you're going through. I appreciate that. That's why we brought you in, because you're that kind of guy. He just said, I'm just so happy you've been here for us. You pushed the starters. You made us better. And just gave me 5 minutes of his time. When he's getting ready to play the biggest game of his life, or coach the biggest game of his life, and he just took a few minutes just to give me that love, and that's the kind of guy he was, and it just made me feel really cool, and at least give me that moment of feeling like I was part of the
team. Yeah, it's a little vindication, a little bit there.
Yeah,
self-worth. That shows you, that's a coach right there. That's a good coach. He could have just done anything, okay, see ya, but he came down to take time with you, and that shows you. That means
so true. Yeah. So true. So true.
Yeah, what's Brett Favre story there?
I don't know if I can tell that story.
Well, you can do it. How about any PC story part? You can do it PC style with
Brett was everything that people kind of thought he was. He was just a maniac, and at that time, you know, he was running around. He was partying. They had enjoyed a couple of years of the Super Bowl.
Sure.
And
Different time also, too. Definitely different time. It was way back there. And
it was a little more,
if I compare it to wrestling at all, it was a lot more wide open.
Exactly. Yeah. And like I said, he was just a competitor. He was one of those guys that I saw completely broken down on a Wednesday and suited up and rocking and rolling on a Sunday. You know, he's just his competitive nature was second to none. It was pretty amazing.
Well, he didn't miss any games, right? He didn't miss any sponsors.
No. And I guess I would see him on a Wednesday or Thursday, you know, hobbling into the locker room, barely able to move. And then by Sunday, man, he was game ready and ready to go. So it was pretty cool.
Well, and I see some of those guys, like we knew that came wrestle with us for a while was Steve Mongo McMichael, who's going through some MS stuff, I think, right now. Wishing him the best. But really cool guy, great guy. But he was insane. Those guys were like, they were tough, tough dudes, you know. And I see this guy who was an all pro, you know, DL lineman.
Yeah.
He was like incredible. Like he was just awesome. And then I give him the wrestling ring and I'm like, this guy could barely walk a straight line. You know, I mean, it's two different things. But at the same time, it was like, wow, like this guy, you know, we'd go out sometimes and we'd meet him in bars and stuff. And he was, they were wide open, man. They were tough dudes, those
Bears, those guys in the 80s and the early 90s. Shit, man, when I came into the league, you know, at halftime, the head coach was smoking a cigarette and one or two of the players were.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it was. So that just tells you, you know, if the games were like that, what kind of guys they were off the field. And it was fun, man. You know, listen, we all know this day and age, you can't get away with anything. You can't do anything that's forget about the PC stuff and all the stuff that's sort of, you walk that line. It's just about, you know, having fun and being able to throw a few back or whatever without having someone camera or something like that in your face. You know, it's just impossible.
I think it's blown out of proportion. The cancel culture right now and anything, you know, it's kind of so weird, but you know, there's a lot of times that we'll be like, if I'm out with you and hanging out, you're 6'8", you know, 6'8" beers for me, that's a lot. 6'8" beer for you is not really that much. It's like, okay, whatever, you know, I mean, so if somebody said, oh my God, Matt was drinking six, he had 10.
Right.
Beers. Everybody's like, oh, he must be an alcoholic. You're like, no, he's 6'8". It's not eight beers is not a lot. Not that I've seen you drink eight, but I'm just saying, you know. But some of the guys that I knew, you know, from that I wrestled with, those guys would throw back 30 beers. It was nothing to them. You know,
yeah, I wish I liked that much beer. To be honest with you, man. That was the hardest thing when we were out there in Australia was that there was so much beer. Yeah. And I'm an alcohol guy. I'm a fine spirits guy. You know, I want my Jack Daniels. I want my whiskey and shit. But it worked for Andre because I wanted to throw back the calories. The beers were flowing.
Some of the Andre stories, bro. I mean, we were talking about some of them, but you know, his hand was so big that he would put the beer can. You weren't allowed to walk from bar to bar, and he would do it just to do it. I mean, because he'd like one sip and the beer's gone. But just to do it, he would put the beer and you'd never see it. It'd be in his hand.
Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's how
that was kind of the biggest sort of scare factor for me going into this series. Was just that I wasn't gonna have that wow big factor, you know, that hugeness that he had. Right. And it's just almost impossible to emulate, you know. I mean, they could have gone out and found a 7-foot guy, but would he have had that same sort of, you know, the same sort of characteristics otherwise? But that was one of my biggest fears, was just trying to be so big and have the big hands and all that stuff that he had. It was just that made him so freaking unique.
Yeah, you pulled it off, bro. You did a great job, and everybody was so happy with everything you've done. And I talked to some of the producers and stuff, and everybody was like, "Man, I mean, all you guys just killed it." You know, you, Kevin, playing Macho Man, and the Wild Samoans, and just everybody. I mean, everybody. Just, I mean, Joseph, who's playing, you know, Rocky's dad.
Yeah.
You know, you guys all did so well, man. And it's like
you're right. You're absolutely right. And it marvels me a little bit that, you know, because I don't know, being that we were involved in, I always feel like this is the little show that could, you know, and you feel like they got so lucky with so much great casting, you know, like you said, just from Kevin, and Kevin grew up being a huge Macho Man fan, and he just had those things down. And, you know, even our boy, Brett Azar, who played Iron Sheik, say what you want about Brett. He's a crazy character, but he had the Sheik down, you know, and Joseph.
Sure.
And Joseph, the same thing, and all of them. And there's just so much great casting that went on here that's what I think is amazing to watch.
Right, right. So you finish your NFL career, and you're like, okay, what am I going to do next? What am I doing now? Yeah. How did you transition into acting? Because it's not easy. I mean, I went from wrestling into that world. It's not easy.
No, it's you know this. It's like going from a 1% job to another 1% job.
It really is.
You know, it's really insanity. You know me a little bit. I have the propensity to, you know, want to crack jokes, want to be a fun guy, and I have that stuff. And so I have that naturally kind of comedic ability. But right. I started hosting radio and TV shows when I was playing ball. Oh, and, nice. You know, I moved around a lot, as I was saying, for different teams. So I'd come into a new market and, you know, I would host some radio shows or do a Matt Willig show or whatever. You know, it doesn't matter what sometimes you're in these small markets, you can do all kinds of shows. And I just got comfortable talking and being in front of the camera. And then I had my brother's girlfriend at the time said, hey, I got an agent that deals with a lot of ex-athletes. Why don't you talk to him and just see what he thinks? And sure enough, I was kind of getting later on in my career, and those thoughts started creeping in. Hey, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? You know, thought about being a broadcaster and getting on the broadcast. But at the time, like, I was thinking, you know, doing Tony Siragusa's job at the time on the sidelines. I'm like, that's the gig, man. For sure. I can stand there for 1 minute, you know, maybe 10 minutes of the game. I'm giving a couple of opinions. So I got with this agent, and one off season, I started auditioning for commercials. I figured I could do commercials because it was a short-term thing. I didn't want to get into any long-term stuff. And I booked my first audition. I booked my first audition, and then I booked my third audition. And I just sort of got in a role right away and had a big national commercial, like, right out the gate, pretty much. Nice. And, yeah, it was those kind of things. Like, well, shit, this is easy. You know? Yeah. I don't know what the big deal is, man. You just got to have a good personality. They'll find you. And so I just did that. And then when I finally retired, I thought, you know, hey, let's give it a shot. I got into some acting classes and worked with a teacher for a couple of years and just continued to kind of work. And again, there was a novelty at first, you know, I was the new guy on the block. And then I just sort of kind of kept building and building and you know how it goes. It's just, you kind of figure out how far your ladder goes, you know? I mean, yeah, I could have stopped at being a big bouncer guy and probably worked, you know, somewhat consistently for several years. Right. I wanted more. I wanted to be able to kind of put myself out there and sort of see how far I could push myself and push the limits of what I could do on the screen. And so that's kind of how it went. Well, how it started, anyways.
Yeah, yeah. And before we even met, so we have a mutual friend, and he's you played with him, and he's Coach Harlow. So my wife works with them and was talking about, my husband just got this job on Young Rock, and he's going to go film that in Australia. And they're like, well, our friend is playing on the Giant. And I'm like, okay, so she tells me your friend. I'm like, okay, who's this guy? Let me look him up, you know. And then like she had to ask your name, so then I looked it up. I go, oh, wait a minute, I know him. I know where do I know his face from? And I looked your IMDb. I was like, okay, meet the Millers and Dexter. I remember him on Dexter. Yeah. And she's like, oh yeah, totally on Dexter. Yeah. That's where I remember him from, you know. So I'd see your face, and then right off the bat, I mean, we get to let's transition into Young Rock, because I tell you what a freaking great time that was, huh?
Yeah, you know, and you know this, you know, we both come from these worlds of, athletic competition and even you guys, teamwork.
Being in a locker room and,
yeah. Being in a locker room, all that atmosphere that it is. And you give up a lot of that when you shoot movies and when you do this, just because it's sort of it can be a loner, especially the high level actors. But anyways, yeah, man, I'm telling you what, we were strangers in a strange land. Who bonded, and it became, and I think you'll agree, you know, some of the funnest couple of months that you could have on a set. There's no question.
Yeah, it could have been. So what happened was that we get this we all get all our own stories, but we have to go to Australia for 3 months, at least 3 months, to go film Young Rock season one. And we're in Brisbane, Australia. So you're in a different land away from your life, basically, for, you know, for a week. Okay, I get it. But 3 months is a long time. And then we had to quarantine. We had to go and be, yeah.
Yeah, the quarantine, you know, puts you automatically in this little, because at that time, you know, people weren't going anywhere. Right. You know, life was shut down. And the idea that you could go somewhere and have the quarantine was a brutal deal all in itself.
Yeah, we all had to get special permission from the Australian government to go to their country. Right. And that we had to be like essential workers for the project, whatever, because we couldn't film in Los Angeles. And that's why we ended up going to a different country to film. And, you know, because Young Rock had to have a lot of different places, had to look like California, had to look like Hawaii, had to look like Philadelphia, yeah. Had to look like all the different places. That's why people film in Los Angeles a lot. It's because you can make it look like kind of anywhere. It's hard to go film in the desert in Phoenix, because it looks like the desert and that's it.
Yeah.
Well, because we were able to go to Brisbane and they have the beach, you know, they had cities, we could make it look like all these different places. So we all quarantine for 2 straight weeks in our hotel rooms. And thank God we had hotel rooms with a kitchen in it and a balcony.
That's right.
And we had a little living room and a little room, because there was a lot of people that went and they quarantined in a Days Inn type thing with windows wouldn't open. I don't know how they did.
Yeah, I don't know. If I didn't have my balcony, I'm telling you, I wouldn't have made it. There's no way I would have made it. So we're talking about Josh, you know, he was
that's right.
They had rooms with no, you couldn't even open the window.
That's right. I have no clue. And they just ordered every meal out, or they had like food delivered to them. At least us, we had a kitchen. We'd call the
grocery store or whatever.
Yeah, the grocery store. We had Uber Eats, of course, but we had the grocery store that we ordered what we wanted. They'd bring us, you know, cereal or eggs or bacon or whatever we wanted to cook in the morning. And it'd make it a little bit more like home. But that was tough, man. And that was tough. You know, you're sitting there like, oh man, what did I get myself into here? About day 9, I started really, I was like crawling on the walls, you know? I couldn't wait to get COVID tested. You know, they'd knock on your door to COVID. I'm like, yes, I get to talk to somebody. Because that it was 18 hours difference over there, it wasn't like we could just Zoom call home,
right.
You know, or FaceTime home, because it was they were on different time zones. We were like by yourself for 2 weeks.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like it wouldn't be that big of a deal, but or maybe it does. But you know, you could do everything under the sun that you could do, and still have another 10 hours to go in the day. You know, we were lucky enough to have a kind of a workout, you know, thing. They had some weights for us and things like that, you know, you can watch TV for a few hours. You could binge a couple of movies. But again, you know, then it's like, okay, now it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. What am I going to do?
Exactly.
And everybody at home is sleeping. You know, everybody back here in the States is sleeping. So it was a weird deal. I'm hoping. I don't know what the current situation is, but you know, I'm hoping, and I'm vaccinated. But I'm hoping that if I do get a chance to go back, we all do get a chance to go back. That the quarantine situation is a little bit better. I could do a week.
Yeah.
Do a week.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah. It was tough that 2 weeks. And then
we get out of that.
Yeah. We don't really know what to expect. You don't know who you're going to meet. You know, you could be alone for 3 straight months in this town. Really? Yeah. You really could. You just, it was what it was. You got to pay bills and do what you do. And okay, great. Great opportunity. Let's knock it out. And as for me, I know you guys got out a couple days before I did.
Yeah.
But then I got out and I met John Tui, who played Sika, the Wild Samoan, one half of the Wild Samoans. I met everybody that day a little bit. I think up on the roof, you guys were having a barbecue. I met you guys real quick. But then me, Tui, and Fassi, who plays the other Samoan, went out and just had a couple. We had dinner. They took, hey, you know, dude, you've been locked up. Let's take you out. Okay, great. So we just went, had a couple of beers. And hey, we had a shoot the next day. We're coming out, going to go shoot. And Tui goes, hey, my man, what you got going on here? And I said, oh, man, I'm just, you know, I got a couple beers and I got a bottle of Terramana tequila in my room that Dwayne sent us all. And, well, I haven't tried it yet. Let's try it. All right. Just come back in my room and we have one shot. Before we know it, I mean, I guess we were just so happy to be talking to somebody. You know, we drank the whole bottle of tequila.
I remember that night because he called me over and said, "Hey man, come on over. We're in Chavo's room." And I'm like, "Dude, I'm exhausted now. I'm not feeling great. I'm gonna chill tonight."
We got a film tomorrow, bro.
I know. And you guys got after it. Well, that was like you said, man, meeting John and having that freaking right off the bat was that sort of set a precedence for us hanging the next 3 months.
And basically, that's what we did for 3 months. It was, you know, we called it the over 40 gang because it was me, you, Kevin, who plays Macho Man, the two Wild Samoans. And we literally just, we'd get done working and we'd just go to somebody's hotel room and watch, you know, either, you know, rugby or grab a couple of beers or whatever and stop, you know, order a pizza. And that's
What are we eating and what are we drinking? That's kind of what we did.
Exactly. And we never missed the gym. The next day our gym was right down the street. So we were at the gym the next day, every day doing our thing, you know, filming when we had to, you know, going for a bike ride down the river and hanging out. But it was like us five amigos hanging out for three straight months. It was great.
And the even cooler thing about that is that we all come from completely different sort of, you know, ways that we got there. You know, I mean, you from your field, me from mine, and them coming from New Zealand, you know, for them just a short trip. Kevin, who's, you know, obviously been producing things, and just we all came from these different ways of life, but yet for 3 months we got along, I think, so well that there was never any kind of, you know, I mean, yeah, guys are gonna, but there was never any problems, man. We just freaking gelled pretty much. Our personalities kind of fit in nicely with everything. It was pretty special.
Well, that reminded me because it reminded us of being in a locker room, because when you're on a team or when in wrestling, I mean, the guys that I hang out with in wrestling, I don't know in real life that we would have ever had come together, but in wrestling, we're brothers. Like, I'd die for these guys and vice versa, because some of these guys are my best friends, and all different races, all different sizes, all different colors. And we're all just like so tight. And I think that's what happened with us, is kind of that locker room mentality. We all just, dude, this is where we're here. And these guys are all pretty cool, you know? And one's a Jew or Samoan from New Zealand. One's a Jewish guy from New York. And, I'm just a Mexican guy. You're just a big old white dude, you know? And we just all got, it was awesome, man. I really enjoyed it.
It was, and we laughed, man. We laughed at a lot of the same things, you know, which was hilarious. It wasn't just, it wasn't just eating and drinking. It was we laughed together a lot, which is, again, as adult men, you kind of miss that as you get older. Number one, and number two, to be on a job where you're making money and you're doing good work, and then still doing that was a killer bonus.
That's true. I mean, there was a couple, if you think about it, there were some tears that flowed, you know. We had Fosse had his baby while we were over there.
Yeah.
You know, so they were up all night long, you know, waiting for the baby to come. And so, I mean, there's a lot went down, you know. That's pretty good. But how did you even hear about Young Rock? Did you just get an audition call and say, well,
yeah, it came very quickly, and sometimes those are the best ways to come. You know, I got a call for the they'd already had a couple round of auditions, and it was basically I was going to go meet with Nanachka Khan and a couple of the producers, and I had a couple scenes, and you know, it was the very first scene of the first episode where I come walking in, and I had some French dialogue. And you know how it goes, man. And they say this often, you know, when you walk in a room, you either feel it or you don't, or you know, it's kind of instantaneous, both for the actor and for the people watching.
You know when you kill the audition, even when you don't, you know it.
Yeah, yeah. And I walked in and I did my thing and gave some French, you know, had some French dialogue. And she even asked me, I remember right afterwards, she goes, "Do you actually speak French?" You know, which to me was a great indication of, okay, I've got him, man. I've got him real. I just got to reel him in. And so from that, you know, from that day to the first Zoom, table read that we had, I had never done the voice again. Well, for them, I had never they never gave me anything about the voice. It was just from that day to the first table Zoom was the first time that I really kind of showed them, you know, the character and the voice and everything. So yeah, it was quick and painless and found out pretty quickly, I guess, you know?
Yeah. That's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah. That was cool.
That's really cool. Really cool. So now we're hearing right now is season two is a go. No one knows anything. We're still waiting to find out what's going on.
It's almost worse than hearing that we're not sure if we're going to win season two. But, you know, I mean, obviously, look, the fans are out there listening. Right. You know, Chavo is going to be back. Obviously, they're going to have something going on. You hope. I know. And that's what you're supposed to say. Yeah. And, you know, my character did really well and was popular for the season. And we hope that I'm going to be back. So we're both in the same boat. We've heard some things about some of our friends who have gotten the word, and that's all cool. And so that kind of bodes well for us. But, you know, I think, part of the show is wrestling. We're seeing it. We're seeing ripples of it already on TV. I don't think it's a coincidence that all of a sudden these shows are coming out talking about old wrestlers and doing biographies on all on these wrestlers, and it's sort of had a nice little effect where the wrestling is back in the lexicon of our society right now.
Yeah, for sure. And it's kind of like one thing, wrestling, I think what happened in the world is that, like, the Hollywood world, they never really saw it before. We all kind of knew it, but all of a sudden they're realizing, wow, okay, first of all, wrestling is box office. People are paying to watch it. You know, not just WWE and pro wrestling, but them wrestlers in film and shows about wrestlers. People are like, wow, this, that has a bigger audience than we actually thought. And then all of a sudden you got these wrestlers that are very talented in what they're doing. They're not just, you know, these big meathead guys. And then we have anything that we start doing about wrestling, it's getting this, people are starting to watch it, you know? And that's what I hear about Young Rock, is that although they love everything about it, they really love the reviews that the wrestlers are getting, that you guys are getting, that the wrestling is getting. It's amazing, man. It's great.
Yeah, and again, that leads to the idea that how can they not sort of want to duplicate that again and do some of that again? But as we also know, two of us that have been in the business a little bit, you know, it's, it can change on a dime, and they can decide to explore a whole nother avenue. So we're keeping our fingers crossed and hoping that we get to make the big travels again.
That's true, man. And hopefully we'll see where we're going to go. If we're going back to Brisbane or we're going here, we're still waiting to hear everything that's going on, you know? So whatever it is, season two, Young Rock will be coming back to you, and I'm sure would be very, very, very good. As the first season was. Hey man, it's been great talking to you, but before we leave on Suplex and Cervezas, we do this thing called rapid fire questions, where I ask you some quick questions, and you know, nothing quick, nothing bad, it just, there's no right or wrong answer. You tell me, you know, it's just for your fans to get to know you a little bit more, what you like and what you don't like. And
I should have had a cerveza with me.
I know exactly. It's during the day, so I'm like, all right, we'll let that go.
All right.
Yeah.
But go for it.
And you can explain answers if you want. No big deal. But,
okay.
All right. So, are you a classic car guy or a new car guy?
Ooh, I'm more of a new car guy. I've had four Mercedes in a row, I think, and just for me, I love classic cars, but I need the room, and the newer cars, especially the Mercedes for me, has the room, and I like comfort over style right now. Although Mercedes, pretty good style.
A Mercedes, right? Yeah, awesome. That's funny, because I don't really ever have to, I fit in everything, you know?
Hey, fuck you.
Exactly.
Sorry. Can I say that?
You can cuss on it. That's okay. It's one thing better. It's the many drawbacks being a small guy and big guy business. Sometimes it's awesome because, like, I never have problems sitting on planes and all, so I'm good, you know?
I know.
So are you a blonde or brunette guy?
Ooh, that changes with the wind. Right now, I'm into the blondes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Bourbon or tequila guy?
Oh, bourbon. Without question. Yeah.
Nice.
All kinds.
Although we did do drinks and turn on tequila over there.
Hey, and by the way, that's if we're lucky enough, Dwayne's got to make sure he kicks down at least like
a couple
every week, maybe.
Yeah. Dwayne, if you're listening, Dwayne being The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, we call him DJ. Please send us some more Terramana to us Australia, because we can't get it there.
Put it in case form.
Exactly. In golf, I know you golf, and we golf all to get together. But are you a drive for show or putt for dough guy?
when my, I'll have to say drive, because when my driver's on and I'm, and yeah, I'm hitting the ball off the tee well, then everything else sort of falls into place.
Beautiful.
I hate golf right now.
Do you?
I gave it up.
Did you?
Side note, I gave it up 3 months ago and I haven't played in 3 months.
You're a good golfer. You're actually a good golfer.
I got so frustrated with my game that I said, I'm not going to play again until I go get lessons. And I just went through, a move. I moved homes. And anybody who's moved a home, it takes over all your whole life. So I just, in the last month or so, I just moved. And so, but yeah, I told myself I wasn't going to play until I got some lessons or just did something besides play. So I'm close.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually just took some lessons and straighten my stuff out a little bit, and it's coming. It's looking pretty good.
That's what I need. I need someone to see it. I need to see it on film.
It gets worse before it gets better, because that's actually what happened to me. Like, literally, I had to change my grip over, change my stance to the ball.
Tell me that stuff, man. I don't need to hear that.
Felt foreign, but then, you know, you're an athlete, so you adapt fast, and I adapted pretty fast, and now kind of just hitting the range and figuring things out. And then what you do on the range and when you go to the course, it's a little different. So now going back to the range after playing a few, three or four or five rounds, I'm like back on the range and kind of, okay, all right, I know where I'm at now. So it's actually, I'm actually better golfer than we were, than I was with you.
Just, oh, that's good.
Yeah, still not to where you want to be.
Never.
That stupid game. I hate that game.
I know.
Steak or fish?
Shit, man, you're hitting me with all these things that I love both of. I think if I had to, I'd go steak. Yeah, steak. I'm a meat guy.
Nice. Okay, cool. Are you CrossFit or weights when you work out? Because I know we've both done both, being in, you know, having to bulk up and bigger, and now not bigger.
And then come on, I like the CrossFit, but I'm a weights guy. I'm weights. I'm old school like that.
Nice. Speaking of bourbon, what's your favorite bourbon you're drinking right now?
You know, I'm actually, besides from like a bullet or even a Jack, I like to do like the single malt Jack Daniels, but I'm also into I'm into Japanese whiskeys.
Oh, they're beautiful.
You can drink them with just a little bit of ice, and they just are so smooth and so good. I've been doing it for about eight, nine months now. Just before I left for to go shoot Young Rock, and I love them. They're great.
Yeah, they are good. I'm on the old fashioned kick right now, and I can't have too many of them. But like, we go out, you know, and I have, as long as it's good, a good one. I'm like, I kind of researched a really good recipe. So at my house, you come to the house, I'm going to make you a killer old fashioned, dude.
That's funny you say that, because I'm into old fashions right now too, and I'm wondering, did we get that from somewhere? Did we have that in Australia? Did that somehow get into our brains?
We didn't, but I don't need I had one really good one, and I'm an ex bartender. So I was like, wait a minute. I used to make old fashioned, but I want to really make a great old fashioned. So I did it without the sugar cube. I actually figure out where it's actual like cane syrup. So there's nothing grinding. I don't have to muddle it. It just goes right in. I'm using a rye whiskey.
Okay.
A rye whiskey. Cause I like it's more of a little smoky, little spicy a little bit.
Yeah.
And the real maraschino cherry, which is the Luxembourg or something like that. It's like, like $25 just a little bottle, just a jar. And doing with the big block of ice, you know, and orange twist on it, man. Oh, it's amazing. It's awesome, dude.
Am I mixing my drinks, or is that the one that you can put an egg white in on the top?
No, it's a different one.
Anyways,
they do when they whip the little egg on top of it.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Yeah. Okay, are you an MMA or boxing guy?
MMA. Boxing is fucking boxing these days.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. Now you played with against both these guys, but who's more of a beast, Ray Lewis or Kevin Green?
Well, more of a beast is relative. They were both beasts, but I played literally against Kevin Green, where he, you know, he was frustrating. Quick Kevin Green story. Kevin was an unbelievable pass rusher, and I was playing in Atlanta one year. He was playing for the Carolina Panthers. we were down by a little bit. We were trying to score a touchdown. And, you know, as an offensive lineman, the biggest scare factor is when you're down and you have to pass and they know you're going to pass and they're just,
right.
They're lining up like they're ready to run a 40-yard sprint. And I had played pretty good against them all game long. And he was talking shit the whole game. I'm getting closer, Willie. I'm getting closer. All in good fun. And I had grown up being a huge Kevin Green fan. Absolutely. So it was one of those moments where I'm like, shit, man, Kevin Green's talking shit to me.
Right.
But he ends up getting a sack in one of the last plays of the game. And just in kind of a good spirited way, just freaking laughed in my face. Like, I knew I was getting close. And before he died, which was blew me away when he passed away. It really screwed me up for a little bit because I had just become sort of Facebook friends with him again, mm-hmm. where he asked how I was doing and said, "Are you still acting?" And, you know, it's been awesome. And he actually gave me a compliment where he said, "Dude, you're one of the toughest guys I ever went against." And that blew me away. It was That's like awesome. One of those things where I got a stamp of approval from Kevin Green and we had talked a couple of times and then all of a sudden just randomly he passed. But again, so much for the rapid fire, but that was a great Kevin Green story.
No. That's what rapid fire is about, man, is getting that to know you better. I have a quick Kevin Green story. We, 1980, just late 88, 89. He's playing for the Rams and
he did the wrestling thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. We played for the Rams and I'm playing dunk ball. You know, I'm still 18 years old, whatever. Me and my friend of mine, we're playing dunk ball over here at this little golf course over here in Costa Mesa, right by the golf course. And my friend's a huge Ram fan and has a Ram hat on, actually a Rams, you know, baseball hat on. He looks over and he sees this guy kind of working out in the field and he's throwing a football, but kind of sprinting and stuff. And he goes, "That's Kevin Green." I go, "No way. That's not Kevin Green." And I look and I go, "That's Kevin Green." You know, he was with the Rams, his first team. So my friend goes up to him and goes, "Hey, I'm just a big fan, you know?" And Kevin was so cool. He was like, "Oh man, great. That's awesome." He was like, "Hey, you guys do dunks? Can you do a 360 dunk?" So we did some kind of dunk. And he was like, "Oh man, that's awesome." He was so cool. Signed my friend's hat. It was great. 10 years that's later, awesome. About 10 years later, I run into him at WCW. He came in for a little short stint and told him that story. Now he's in my locker room. And I go, "Man, I got to tell you, you were pretty cool, man, back there to a bunch of, you know, little punk kids." And he was like, that was the kind of guy he was. A good dude, man.
Really, really, really a good dude all around, man. Yeah, he really was. Yeah, for sure.
Now, I'm not sure if you were a wrestling fan, but everybody knew these guys. Were you Hulk Hogan or Ric Flair? Any you like any one of those?
You know what? I liked Ric Flair, actually. Hulk Hogan was easy to, you know, easy to appreciate and all that stuff. But yeah, I was kind of a more Ric Flair guy.
I hear you. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. Brother, what's next for you, man? So you're sitting there. Thanks for being on the show, of course, and doing the rapid fire stuff. But what is actually next for you? What you got coming on here? Anything you want to promote? Anything you want to talk about?
You know what, brother? I'd love to say that I do. You know, right now I don't.
Young Rock, you know, Young Rock,
Young Rock, right? Young Rock, you know,
we hope.
Yeah, I mean, from the show, I've been able to audition for some really cool things and some lead type things, which is awesome. Just, you know, that part's great. And, you know, I've been close to getting a couple of these things and they're just not hitting right now. Right. My focus is I got an 18-year-old daughter and she's graduating in 3 weeks. So really, that's my focus.
Mine too. My 18-year-old son's graduating in 3 weeks and he's taking off to UC Santa Cruz. So
is he really? Right on, man. That's awesome. That's awesome. Mine's going to do like Santa Monica City and then go to Santa Barbara. She wants to go to Santa Barbara.
That's awesome. Santa Barbara's a great school.
Yeah.
Where can anybody find you at, man? Where can they find you on social media and stuff?
Yeah, I'm at Mojo Willig on Instagram. Where else? That's all you need to know. Matthew Willig on Twitter and hit me up, man. I'm big into answering any kind of questions if you have any and I try to stay. I'm not so big that I can't answer my fans. So anybody who wants to ask a couple questions, I'm in.
Well, you heard it, guys. Everybody, thanks for tuning in right there. That's Matt Willig, Andre the Giant from Young Rock, Super Bowl winning champ football player. A Rose Bowl champion. So we got he's had a good story career. A lot more to come from him. Good friend of mine. I can't wait to go spend another hopefully 3 months with you somewhere.
No shit.
Yeah, brother, let's do it up, man. But hey, thanks for being on so much, brother. And it, you really, you made my day just talking to you. That's why I love doing these things. Talking with my friends, to be honest.
No, and I was so burnt out a while ago from doing these, but for someone like you and shooting the shit like we're doing is no problem at all. I'm honored that you had me on, man. You in your own right are a big force, not only in your wrestling world, but now you're crushing it in the movie world and the TV world, which is awesome to see. And as I told you the other day, man, I'm cruising down the freeway in LA and as I'm driving by, I see a Guerrero a billboard. I don't even know what was going on there. You're so big, you didn't even know it was there. So.
I didn't even know it was there, to be honest. I got to check it out, man.
No, but it was my pleasure being on with you, brother. Always anything for you. And I hope we get to see each other soon.
We will, man. Young Rock season 2 coming at you guys. So thanks again for tuning in, and I'll see you soon.
See you, brother. Peace.